Hey, Pacer fans, I'm Miles Turner, and here's the Sideline Guys podcast.
Hello, Pacers fans. It's been, maybe 5 weeks or so since we've last talked to you, but we're thrilled to be coming back to you here on the Sideline Guys, powered by Gainbridge. As always, alongside Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan. The draft lottery is now in the books. I know all of you, like both of us, were eagerly awaiting that May 17th date, eagerly awaiting the results. The results, of course, are in. You know them by now. We're here to discuss them. Jeremiah, when I guess initially saw that number six spot go up, which, by the way, just to kind of paint a brief picture for you, I'm sitting courtside, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, calling a fever game. I threw the draft lottery up on my phone, and I was watching the game and peering down every time the ball went out of bounds or there was a foul or a quick stoppage of player when Tolley was talking, and saw that number six come up as they were going through the draft picks, the Fever, of course, playing at the same time. And obviously, the draft lottery is about moving into the top four. So inherently, that doesn't happen. Inherently, that's disappointing. We knew that there was a little less than a 50-50 chance that this would happen. And we also knew that there was opportunity, there was potential to fall even further back than six. So I'm wondering just kind of your general mood, if you feel like you have a pulse on maybe where the fan is right now, because I think in a lottery system that's set up to try to move teams into the top four, when you don't get there, that's disappointing. You also look at the potential possibilities, and there certainly also were options where the Pacers could be drafting even later than they are. So they are six. What were your general thoughts, your initial takeaways, your gut reaction?
Before I paint my picture, I want you to finish. At what point during the broadcast did you share the news, and when did your inflection level, pick back up? Because I'm guessing you were just a little down when you saw that as you're calling the action at Gainbridge Fieldhouse.
There was definitely some multitasking happening. I had to pay most attention, of course, to the game. But every once in a while, I was able to glance down. And I happened to glance down, and I happened to see them not get seven. And so I think I probably went through the range of emotions like most people did. I just wasn't watching it consistently. And okay, just understanding the odds and how all of it works, when I saw they weren't nine, they weren't eight, they weren't seven, then in my head, I'm like, well, if you know you aren't those three spots, then the odds that you're in the top four are probably, given that information, if what I'm saying makes sense, the odds that you're in the top four are probably greater than you are five or six, because we've talked about this. The odds of them being actually the fifth pick were very, very low. So then, I think probably for everybody, the excitement starts to rise some, and then you see the name there at six. I also come from this from a very jaded perspective, because the Fever have had just rotten, horrendous lottery luck over the years, to where, it's been almost worst case scenario on the Fever side. So there was definitely some disappointment, especially when you saw them, the Pacers, get through seven and they still weren't there. And remember, seven was actually, if there was one spot that was most likely for the Pacers to land in, it was seven. So when I saw that, my hopes weren't really super high. I've learned that by working for the Fever as much as I do. But once they weren't seven, I will admit, for that brief 15 seconds, they did start to raise, and then the draft lottery gods stomped my hope once again.
So I was driving to Fisher's Best Choice Fieldhouse for an 8:45 basketball game. So the timing was not spectacular for the draft lottery broadcast, but I did have the phone in the console and the audio set up to my speaker in my car, and I got a couple of seventh graders in the back seat watching intently. And I loved how the first seven picks, or first seven teams, I guess I should say, were announced, because you just want no chaos. You want exactly as it's supposed to be. And then when the Kings are skipped over for what I think it was for Portland, or maybe there was another team between them, but you knew the Kings moved up into the top four. So at that point, if you get to six, if you can just avoid your name being called at six, then you know you're in the top four. And they say six, and they say Pacers, and there were some boos in the car, and my wife texted a angry emoji face. And then I needed to concentrate on driving. But it was just one of those, are you kidding? Because your hopes were up a little bit because it was going the way you wanted. I mean, worst case scenario, you see the Cavs or you see the Knicks not announced, right, and they go into the top four, and that's one less chance of you having to, of going in the top four. And then you start to think, oh, maybe you're going to be eighth or, you know, heaven forbid, ninth. But when it all went according to plan, I kind of started, I allowed myself to get optimistic, and I was all day trying to think optimistically. But, you know, that's just the life of, you know, both of us, or at least I right now have too much time on my hands. So spent a lot of time thinking about it. But I will say that I'm guessing it was a similar initial reaction. And then maybe as the dust has settled a little bit, the feeling that I have right now is better than it was in the moment. And I think that maybe Pacers fans would agree. What for what seems like 2 months has been considered a draft that had four elite players and then had a drop off. That was why, you know, it fit perfectly. If you won the lottery, you were going to get maybe one of those four players. It does feel like that there is a lot more uncertainty right now with at least picks four through maybe seven or eight. And you can't just go by mock drafts, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but I do think, you know, this is maybe the glass half full view. Getting six is a lot better than seven or eight. So
right,
there is that positive news. And then Kevin Pritchard spoke at length, and I thought afterwards, you know, gave a lot of detail. So but those were the initial thoughts that I had. Disappointment, like many Pacers fans, you really wanted to get a top one, two, maybe three pick. If you won the, if you were in the lottery or if you were in the top four, then it would have been fantastic. But six is better than seven or eight, and really you have no control over it. So you at least do have this optimistic approach to the next month or so, because you do have 6, 31, and 58. I heard Kevin Pritchard mention those numbers. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue like 2, 4, 6, and 10 that we heard from Lynn Dunn leading up to the Fever draft. But I do like 6, 31, and 58. It's better than it has been in my recent memory covering or being a Pacers fan.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, the stat now has been discussed widely. The fact that the Pacers have not drafted in the single digits since before 1990. So it probably is. I mean, you know, they've had drafts where they traded up higher, or they had drafts, you know, like last year where they traded up and got a second first rounder. But in terms of like where the draft stands right now, you've got the first pick in the second round. You've got a top six pick. It is one of the Pacers' best draft hauls they've had in a very, very long time. And that's exciting. And they still have all of that without getting the Cleveland pick conveyed this year. But I think important to note that that's still in your draft arsenal. That's still in this, you know, what you hope is a relatively quick retool, or however you want to use that word and however the front office wants to handle this. But look, this isn't a situation where you have this draft and then all of a sudden you are the team that you feel like you will be capable of. This is going to take hopefully not a ton of time, and hopefully you start to see significant results next year based on this draft. And this is off season, but realistically, to get to the spot you want to be, it's more than just one draft that gets you there. I mean, we're talking about Cleveland. Let's look at their example. They had a few good drafts and turn things around relatively quickly there. So this isn't a situation where even if you nail this number one, even if you nail this first round pick and you nail the sixth pick and he ends up being like the second best guy in the draft. I mean, look at Tyrese Halliburton. He might be the second or third best guy in his draft, and he's very, very good, but this isn't immediately going to turn into a finished product just based on this draft. So I think it's important to still look at that Cleveland pick and view it, even though you don't know exactly where it's going to be, as an asset. And when you consider you've got this draft class, this draft haul that you do, and you've still got that Cleveland pick waiting, I still think you're in a tremendous position. And I think a lot of this is just emotional, like how our brains work, right? Like the excitement of, or I guess I should rephrase, the disappointment of not getting to experience the excitement of jumping into the top four is greater than the excitement of not getting to feel the disappointment of falling to eight or nine, if any of that makes sense. Like being six instead of 8 or 9 is a lot less emotionally exciting than being 6 instead of 1 through 4. And I'm not trying to suggest that 1 versus 6 is the same as 6 versus 8 or 9. But what I am suggesting is, if you just look at it from a raw numbers perspective, it's significant that the Pacers aren't like 8 or 9 here. And when you look at some of these odds, well, they had a 42% chance to move into the top 4, but they had a 36% chance of being 7 or later. So they do avoid that 36% chance as well. And you're in a position here where, look, the Pacers just have so many options in front of them. And you and I have discussed that at length for numerous different avenues over the course of this podcast as the season has wound down, as we did our final season wrap-up podcast. And there are still so many avenues that they could take. And I think that's something that Kevin Pritchard touched on without getting too specific, which, of course, his job is not to get too specific with the media. But look, the Pacers are 6. They've got 31. They've got 58. They've got a nice young nucleus. They've got a lot of directions that they could go, which include, I'm sure, Kevin Pritchard will take calls and probably make calls about, do they want to stick at number 6? And if they don't want to stick at number 6, they've got, you know, the potential resources to maybe move around as well. So you're in a situation where you don't get the home run. You don't strike out either. The draft lottery is probably like a single, but it could have been worse. And who knows? We could be looking back at this, and like you said, there initially was that big top 1 through 4. But I do think that next tier where the Pacers are going to be drafting, if they keep that pick, it just seems like there's been a lot more intrigue around picks 5, 6, 7, 8 than there were back in, January, February, March. And obviously that would be a good thing if that continues to hold up.
And that intrigue will only continue and intensify, because you'll have messages that are put out there, you know, hyping up one player or maybe making one player look less desirable. And so it will be fascinating and probably a more entertaining pre-draft process in Indiana than it has been for quite some time. When you're picking 20 or 22 or 18, it's just hard to get super excited about the draft. There have been some years the Pacers' first pick was in the second round. Because of 6, 31, and 58, and also because of what, saying something without saying too much, I do think Kevin Pritchard, he didn't tip his hand, but he did allow for some honesty that I think is okay. I think it's good to let people know some of what your intentions are and to let people know how big of a deal this summer is to your franchise. There could be other teams that either have, you know, they're on different plans, they have different timelines, they may not value this draft as much. It's not a bad thing to be on the record expressing just a little bit of honesty. And I thought Kevin Pritchard had that last night. And to your point about, you know, top 4 compared to 6 and 8, if you would have gotten top 4, it's like you won the lottery, right? Like, if you have a lottery ticket and you get 4 out of 6 numbers, you don't necessarily say you won, but depending on how much money you win, you think you did win the lottery. And if the Pacers would have just been in that top 4, especially considering this draft that did not have a clear-cut number 1, you would have thought you won the lottery. But by getting 6 instead of 7, I guess I'll say they didn't lose the lottery. So maybe better than a free ticket on the Powerball, they got, you know, maybe $20 back. And with that, they can try to figure out how to make some magic happen. But I did just a few minutes ago, and I mentioned was busy last night, so I did not join the Kevin Pritchard Zoom, but I did go back and listen on Pacers.com, and anyone can do that now. It's on the website, and I'm sure the social media channels have the link. He spoke for roughly 13 or 14 minutes, had about a 3-minute opening statement, and I wasn't sure what to expect because – like many pre-draft press conferences, you'll hear, you know, front office folks, no matter the sport, talk about drafting the best player available. And, you know, after a draft, it's always the guy you picked is the one you had targeted. But Kevin Pritchard right now, you can tell they don't know who they like the most, but they are going to do whatever it takes to get that player. And I think that includes they're not going to just wait and say the player we love, maybe he's projected 4th I just sure hope he falls to us at sixth. If they love him that much, they're going to try to do whatever it takes. And I mean, I'm not like giving insider trade secrets, but I mean, his exact words, and I wrote some of them down. When you start in the draft, sometimes it's where you can end up. Sometimes it isn't. He spoke of last year. They had the assets to move, and the example would be Isaiah Jackson. They had targeted Isaiah Jackson. Did anybody know this? You know, only the front office and scouts would know just how much they wanted him, but they saw him. They had the assets to move. They got aggressive, and they got him. And so it does seem like, and with pick 6 and 31, you could say, well, they'll have an opportunity to get two pretty good players. But just with everything he said, he referenced his first Portland draft when he was known, I think, as Trader Kevin. I mean, he was moving all around the draft. And I remember watching that draft thinking, what are they doing? Because they went from, you know, 7 to 2 back to 5 and then ended up at 6. And what he said was in that draft, they wanted Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge. Now, you have to take him at his word because those were the players that they got, but it makes sense. And those two players really just changed the course of that franchise's future. And he says, we're going to go get our player. And he also says, we're not messing around. Who are the two players we want? And we're going to go get those guys. So, I mean, I go back and listen. You can take your own notes. You can listen and you can say, maybe some of it is just front office speak. I don't think so. I think he was being really honest. And if you go back and listen, maybe even listen a second time, he's saying a little bit about what he's feeling and what the direction is. And while not, you know, specifically talking about certain players, I think that you can have a pretty good feeling that you're going to see one, probably more than possibly two impactful players join the Pacers, and they'll do whatever it takes to get those two guys.
Yeah, it's not front office speak when it's coming from a guy, as you mentioned, that has made as many moves as he has over the course of his career, that was willing to, you know, make the Domantas Sabonis and Tyrese Halliburton trade happen. He did reference that when he was talking, and he said, look, you know, you don't make moves like that to stop making moves. You know, right. We're going to do the type of thing that we need to get ourselves in the position where we feel like we need to. And look, I know a lot of that attention here, and let me preface this, and you did the same thing, but I just want to be 100% clear here. I have no idea what Kevin Pritchard is going to do. I have no idea what the front office is thinking. I have no clue who they like. I have no clue who they don't like. I wish I did. If I did, I wouldn't tell you this on the podcast, though. But I don't know. But so let me just give some hypotheticals here. There's been, I think, a lot of attention already. We even discussed it. I briefly kind of brought up the concept. You're at 6. If there is a big 4, and there is the feeling that there is a big 4, you're only 2 picks away from that. You've got pick 31, you've got pick 58, you've got a first round pick next year, you've got a Cleveland pick in there as well. You have a ton of resources if that is what you feel like you want to try to do. Now, you always pay a premium to go up. So like the idea of moving up even a couple of spots in your head, you might go, oh, well, just toss them a second rounder. Well, you know, think of that the other way around. If you had the 3rd or the 4th pick and 6 comes offering you, you know, a second round pick to move up into the top 4, how excited are you about that? It's going to take a real resource to move into the top 4 if that's what Kevin Pritchard in the front office want to do. Again, I have no idea. But they do have the resources. They do have the opportunity to potentially do that if the right move comes along. I think there's a fine balance here. And it's one that I think the front office has done a really good job of is being aggressive but not forcing. So, like, if Sacramento says to you, hey, you can have 4, but it's going to cost you 6, and it's going to cost you your first-round draft pick next year, and we want the Cleveland pick too, well, they might really like a guy at 4, but go, look, that's crazy. We aren't mortgaging the rest of our, you know, future draft assets to move up 2 spots. So there's a fine balance when you're in a position like this of staying aggressive, of wanting to move around, of having the assets to move around, but also to not force things and to not give up way too much just to potentially move up 2 or 3 picks. So I think if they're looking in that direction, the attitude of where those first 4 teams are will be important. If those teams are like, we're going to hold on this to grim death unless you just blow us away with an offer we can't refuse, well, I would be personally surprised if that was something that the front office was interested in. But I do think, I do actually am very confident in this, that they will knock on all of those doors. And I think that will include knocking on doors of potentially looking back a little. Now, I'm not suggesting the Pacers are looking back. I'm not even suggesting that I have any idea if the Pacers are going to look to move down a little bit. But there, but the way that, you know, that you have to think in a draft is, look, is there a potential that at six, you're in tier two of the draft guys coming out, and maybe there's two or three or four guys that you really, really like amongst that class? Well, could you maybe go back a couple of spots, pick up another late first rounder, select a guy like you did in Isaiah Jackson that you weren't really, you know, wasn't on your radar at this time last year? That trade was very different, but hey, if you really loved two, three, four guys in this area, and you say, hey, they're all going to be available there at six, which means there at least one or two of them is going to be available there at, I don't know, eight or nine, and you can go pick up somebody in the 20s or something like that. I honestly think that will be an opportunity that they would consider as well if that is the scenario. So all of that to say, the Pacers are picking sixth. They have the sixth spot. I have no insider knowledge, but it would not shock me based on hearing from Kevin Pritchard, based on looking at his previous history when he's drafted up in this position, based on understanding how aggressive he wants to be, and based on the type of resources that the Pacers have and are still looking to acquire, by the way. If the Pacers didn't end up picking sixth on draft night, that wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, and the other thing that he mentioned, which is always sort of confusing, and you wonder, you know, what can you do with that? But he said, he mentioned a number. He mentioned around $25 million in cap space. And I know, you know, again, with the football draft having been just a month or so ago, you heard a lot about cap space before that was free agency and how do teams use it. But in the NBA, it's rare to have that much experience, so that much cap space, I should say, at least this offseason. So the Pacers have another quote-unquote asset in that cap space. And then, you know, I think maybe you mentioned that Cleveland pick for next year. You have your own pick for next year. So there are a lot of options. You could put the Cleveland pick on the table. You could say maybe you'll trade your pick, make it lottery protected. And so you have a couple of different in the playoffs or not scenarios. So there are a lot of options. And so what I think they're going to do is instead of just make their draft board and say, you know, 1 through 30, these are the players we like, and whoever is available when we pick, we'll take that player. That's a common, you know, thought that best case scenario, that's what you do. You make your war room and you do that. I think it's going to be more who are the two and then maybe the three or the four players that if we had two of these four guys on our roster when the season started, we are going to be thrilled. And maybe you do whatever it takes to get those guys. I mean, it almost seems unrealistic to say you're only going to pick two and you're going to do whatever it takes to get those two, because there are always a number of scenarios. And as Kevin Pritchard said, you know, it takes two. Someone has to be willing to deal with you. And some of these teams, think about this. If they don't have a lot of cap space, maybe this is a year they don't want to spend a lot of money on, you know, a mid to high first round draft pick. So maybe they're a team. There are teams that might be willing to trade this year's pick for next year's pick because they might have more cap space next year. There just are so many options. It is why I'll probably start listening to NBA related podcasts now after taking the last couple of months off, because I've not really had as much interest in the content. I think the content that will be out there around the league is impactful to the Pacers right now. So I'm looking forward to seeing that and just seeing the direction this franchise takes. And also I'm looking forward, Pat, to seeing some of these pre-draft workouts that will happen very soon.
I think the pre-draft workout process, I think this next month is like tenfold more fascinating than it ever has been from a Pacers perspective. You know, what guys can you get in? Can you, every guy has to make a decision, right? So like those top four players, are they willing to work out at five or six? Who exactly are the Pacers bringing in? And of course, that process has already started. And as we've noted, you got to bring in guys for 31 and for 58 as well. So will you get some big names in here? The Pacers in a long, long time haven't been able to work out the top players in the college draft coming out. Well, they very likely will have that opportunity as well. And a couple of points that you brought up that I thought are important to touch back on here, to circle back on, is – it takes two to make a trade, right? So, like, I think that's one of the areas that when you look at NBA Twitter and fan bases and stuff, I think that's one thing that I always feel like sometimes some people fail to grasp. This isn't a transaction with a bank. This isn't saying, hey, you've got the sixth pick and it's worth X, and you've got the Cleveland pick and it's worth X, and if you combine those two things, the bank will give you X. No, you need another team that's willing to say, yes, we want to do that trade. Yes, we value this in the same way you do. And if those other teams don't want to do that, that's not an option. You can't just say, here is a $8 bill and a $2 bill, and that gets you a $10 bill. It doesn't work that way in sports. You need another team that values those things in the equal way that you do. So I think as you look at potential moves, and there's a million of them. I mean, you and I could sit here and talk till 1 p.m. and discuss potential moves. I discuss a lot of them there, but you know, if there's also the potential that the sixth pick could theoretically get you a player if the Pacers wanted to look in that direction too, a younger player that's already been drafted. I mean, who knows? Because who would have in a million years seen the Tyrese Halliburton trade coming? So when you look at some of these recent moves, I mean, look, nobody saw Isaiah Jackson coming. Nobody saw Tyrese Halliburton coming. And I think that's important to perspective to keep here. Yeah, like if you want to look at the mock drafts and see who's around six, I think that's a valuable exercise to kind of immerse yourself in where the Pacers are drafting and become more knowledgeable about some of those players that are coming out in that area. But I think there is just, you know, such a high opportunity of the Pacers perhaps moving around in the draft. And you just have to remember, like, how many moves the Pacers have made that totally caught everybody out of left field. And I think the other point that I wanted to touch on here is, again, you're not viewing this draft from such a narrow scope that it is this draft, and that's the end of the potential moves we have to make to get our franchise where they want to be. If there's a trade that they're looking at and it's not available, it's not, we have to make that trade because this is the only way that we can get better. There's a free agency period. There will be a draft next year where you will have your own pick. You'll hopefully have that Cleveland first rounder. You'll have a second round draft pick. I mean, you'll have a ton of assets there as well. And maybe we can get this guy on the podcast. I think we have before. I know I've had him for one-on-one web show type of sit downs. But I think one thing that maybe doesn't get discussed enough is, you know, somebody like Ryan Carr, who heads the scouting department from a draft perspective for the Pacers. Like, he's got to be knowledgeable on 2023, right? Because the Pacers have all of these assets, and what's the next year's draft class potentially going to look like? And when you're making decisions, when you are evaluating choices here as the draft that's coming up, you know, what does that 2023 draft look like? Because odds are, you know, you and I are going to be talking a year from now, and we have no idea where the Pacers will be picking, but they will still be looking, hopefully, to be putting more of, I don't want to say final touches, but hopefully that core will be a little bit more clearly defined and have taken a step forward. But you have to know what's going on in potentially in 2023 as well, because a lot of trades that you're looking at, including, you know, your own potential movement, could involve that draft class as well. So the scope of how you have to view everything is so wide. And when you look at the Pacers' perspective, you have cap room, you've got young players, you've got high draft selections, you've got future potential first round selections. I mean, there's just so much you have to think about. It almost hurts my brain to think about it, to even, you know, discuss all of it here on the podcast. And it makes for what's going to be a very, very busy, but intriguing and exciting, I think, next month. Plus, I mean, we'll be talking about a lot of this stuff when we get into the free agency and the trade period as well. But it makes for, you know, a fascinating late May, early mid-June type of discussion, type of, you know, analysis from a Pacers fan perspective.
Over the last couple of months, I'm guessing many of you listening fired up Tankathon and, you know, went through and ran the simulator to see what pick the Pacers would have. And then it would also project out a player. Well, now you can just look at mock drafts because you do know the order, at least the order before any potential trades. And so I did a quick sampling of five different mock drafts, the first five that showed up when I Googled 2022 NBA mock draft, real scientific here. But it does seem like the top four or the top three are set, and now it's 4, 5, and 6 could be in any order. And CBS Sportsline had the Pacers getting Keegan Murray, as did Bleacher Report. The New York Post had Jaden Ivey falling to the Pacers, and then Yahoo and ESPN both having the Pacers with Shaedon Sharpe at number 6. And I believe all of those, although one might have been different, had those three players in you know, one order, a different order for 4, 5, and 6. The other player that in one of the mock drafts that I saw, AJ Griffin, jumped up to number 5, I believe, in one of those. So you can watch the highlights now of those players. You can get excited. That was one of the things that, you know, my son was disappointed because he said, I've spent the last 3 weeks watching highlights of the top 4 guys. I was like, well, you can still do that. And here's the other thing. It might be tough to get the projected 1 or 2 pick to come to Indianapolis for a workout, but I thought it was interesting on more than one occasion that Kevin Pritchard said that the player we pick, we will get to know, that player will come to Indianapolis and spend time in our facility, and we will know that that player wants to be in Indiana and be with the Pacers. And so I love the fact that the pre-draft workouts are now a portion at least open to the media, and that you can do an interview with a player wearing a Pacer workout, wearing Pacer workout attire. Sometimes you, I think sometimes Weed Hotchkiss will do a one-on-one interview with those players. And well, it'll be interesting to watch because you might not project a trade into the top 2 or 3. Those, the teams that win the lottery and get the 1 pick or the 2 pick, it seems rare that they trade out of that. You'd have to offer a lot, as you mentioned earlier. So maybe those players don't work out. But anybody else, let's say maybe after the top 3, I think that those players will be interested, even though they may want to be 4th or 5th from a financial perspective. I think there's some real intrigue around the league that Kevin Pritchard mentioned. Let's just look at those 3 teams, Kings, Pistons, Pacers. Maybe you make a little bit more money in your draft scale from being the 4th pick, but I can see there being real interest in being a part of what Kevin Pritchard and this organization is building. And I think that they'll get a number of top level prospects to come to work out. And that makes me excited about seeing what transpires over the next month.
Yeah. And look, you've got a bunch of teams here that are ahead of the Pacers that are probably potentially more in on a rebuild. Orlando, for example. Now they're in a different situation. They're picking number 1. So they're just going to get to select the player that they like the most. But I mean, how could you not, if you were a prospect in the, oh, I don't know, the 4 to 10 range, how could you not like the idea of playing with Tyrese Haliburton, right? Like, so much of this is fit, especially when you get out of the top few picks. Like, whoever goes number 1 isn't really going to have a ton of choice. Every once in a while, we see a player, you know, kind of strong hand their opportunity at 1 and get to where they want to go. But if you're 1 or 2 or 3, you're just trying to get as high of a selection as you have. I think fit then becomes a lot more important once you get into those next couple of spots. And in terms of, and you know, Tyrese talked about this as well. Like, there were a couple of teams that he said he didn't want to go to because he didn't want to get in a log jam. And then he ironically kind of ended up in a backcourt log jam in Sacramento. And that was part of the reason that the trade ended up happening. But look, the opportunity is so important. The opportunity you end up with is so vital to, I think, your own level of success. Jalen Smith is probably a great example of this, right? Like, if he doesn't end up in Phoenix and ends up somewhere else, he might have been looked at as a totally different prospect, something that the Pacers, I think, showed him that he could be with them if that's the option that they both end up choosing. And so how could you not want to play with Tyrese Haliburton? How could you not want to be coached by Rick Carlisle? If you're a 2 or a 3, you know, another name that I've seen kind of in that realm, Benedict, I think you say his last name, Mathurin out of Arizona. I mean, if you're somebody like that or somebody like a couple of those names that you provided, how could you not want to play with a guy who's probably got top 3 vision in the NBA right now and is as young as he is? I mean, that could do great things for your career. Rick Carlisle is, you know, a Hall of Fame caliber coach. That could do great things for your career. This is a draft. The Pacers are going to get to pick, but they're going to get to pick in part, as you noted, on what Kevin Pritchard says is we're going to get somebody that wants to be here long term and that values what we're doing, values the franchise. And that's obviously important when you're in a market like the Pacers are. And everybody has different, you know, goals and desires and all of that type of thing. And of course, there will be guys that say, I want to play in LA and or I want to play in New York or whatever. And I do think that's an important part of this process, because you don't want to put yourself in a position, if you get the right guy in 4, 5, 6 years, where, you know, all of a sudden you're going through a difficult decision and a difficult process like the Pacers have been through, like other teams have been through. And so finding the type of guy that looks at your scenario and goes, wow, I can play next to a guy that's going to set me up as well as almost any guard in this league can, and be coached under a guy like Carlisle, and has already, I think, a nice young nucleus in place. I would imagine that would be very enticing to a player that's looking for the right opportunity, the right fit. And so I think that's a fascinating part of all of this. We obviously won't get a lot of the intel on those type of conversations that come from the front office and ultimately how they influence the decision. But I do think it's a huge part of all of this. And I do think, you know, while the Pacers are never going to have that we're in New York City, free agency, come here type of thing, I do think the core that they have built and the direction that they are currently in, and this is aided by the head coach that you have, would make this a really enticing landing spot to want to prove that you can become a top flight player in this league.
And you mentioned Tyrese Haliburton. Maybe just to shift this discussion a little bit as we sort of wrap up this draft lottery podcast, how about Tyrese Haliburton, how active he has been in the community this month and will continue to be? He was at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the Grand Prix. He was at the draft party, or the draft lottery party, that was for season ticket holders last night. And I believe he has appearances scheduled back out with the Indy 500 festivities. I just love the fact that Tyrese is getting out in the community, interacting with fans. And really, when Kevin Pritchard talks about having players that want to be here, by all accounts, in 3 quick months, Tyrese Haliburton is embracing being a Pacer.
100%. And I think there have been, you know, I think that's something that the fan base has also really picked up on. I try to not always read comment sections. That can be a dangerous thing to wade into. But I do think that's something that I've noticed, whether it's been on Twitter, occasionally on Facebook, Instagram, like the reaction from the fan base of, wow, like, you know, this guy's from the Midwest, but he's not from Indianapolis. And the amount of time that he's been here, whether it's been shots that our digital crew has gotten of him in the St. Vincent Center working out with numerous other players that have been around, or whether it's the ton of appearances that he's made. And I don't know, you know, all the appearance rules and stuff like that, but believe me when I say, like, he does not have to do all of this. I think that's obvious, especially in the offseason. This isn't something required of him from the franchise. This is something that he genuinely wants to do. He was out at a Fever game. In fact, we've had, I think, almost probably close to half of the roster as it currently stands out at a Fever game as well, which I think, you know, is so important from a WNBA perspective to see the support of the NBA and to get players who will actually, you know, come out and sit courtside and lift up the league in that regard. So I think everything that you have seen from Tyrese Haliburton, he has checked every box you'd want him to. He's still very young, and his career path is still, you know, there's so much to be written and so much unknown at this point on where he's going to be with the Pacers and the team they're going to build around him and where's his ceiling and all of that. And it's way too early, I think, to even take really educated guesses on it. But I think what you've seen from him on the floor in the post-deadline era of the Pacers, even though the wins didn't come, how the team looked and how he looked, I think, is so important. And look, I think he, you know, passed all of those tests, and he's doing that in the offseason as well. And it'll be really fascinating, you know, as you're making these decisions here, as you're Kevin Pritchard, as you're the front office, as you're evaluating who to bring in, like, I would imagine one of the first couple of questions, if not the first question you're looking to answer, is how does he fit with Tyrese Haliburton? And so I think that's an exciting question that the front office has to answer, and one that ultimately will weigh heavily on this decision that's upcoming in a month or so.
It was odd, my final thoughts on this podcast, to watch Domantas Sabonis on the stage with the Kings and to see Sacramento win the lottery. But one thing that I wanted to end with is when the Pacers made that trade, I thought there would be a real negative opinion from Pacers fans. And I was surprised, not shocked, but I was surprised by the initial reaction being pretty positive. And then even in those last 2 months of the regular season, when the Pacers did not win a lot of games, Pacers fans I talked to just seemed to be excited about the new direction. And so the thing that I wrote down about Kevin Pritchard saying that he wanted to add a really good core young player is I think you can be enthusiastic about the start of not the rebuild, but just the start of this new direction that started in February when you made a very difficult decision to trade a two-time All-Star and someone who had been sort of your guy to the Kings. You get a guy like Tyrese Halliburton. You know, Buddy Hield was really fun to watch, and I hope we get to watch him a lot moving forward in a Pacers uniform. But you start to think about Isaiah Jackson and Chris Duarte, and you're seeing this core where a couple of years ago, you had a group of guys that were in that 25 to 28 age range. And to be honest, it just didn't work out. A lot of factors went into that, but it just did not work out. And it does feel like a new core is developing. And who can this front office add from this draft? And then in this offseason, what can they do to have a really solid young core? You always need some veterans. So don't misconstrue my comments as if to mean that, you know, so-and-so is on his way out because he's not a part of that young core. You always have to have veteran players, but a core is important to have success at a big level. And I think this team is still focused on getting back to Eastern Conference Finals, winning a championship. That is always the goal. And to do that, you have to have a group that, you know, goes through the grind. They work together, and I just can't wait to see who this next player or two is that can join that young core and give fans continued reasons to be excited. It was a tough year. Last night's draft lottery, it was not a win, but I also say it was not a loss. And, you know, you are still going to get a really good player, and it's maybe some of maybe the reward for going through that tough year and watching some of those games and the struggles that they experienced. You're going to get a sixth pick at the very least, or you're going to get a really good young player, depending upon how they use that pick. And so let's see what happens in the next few weeks.
Yeah, completely agree. Not a lottery win, not a loss, not a home run, but not a strikeout. And look, I think had the Pacers fallen to 8 or 9, then there would have been, you know, real reason for frustration or being down, or, you know, the thought that, man, we went through a tough year and we're going to be picking 8 or 9 here. I do think once, you know, the water kind of settles and you look at where the Pacers are, like there are a few picks ahead of that, right? Like they are just as far ahead of 9 where they could have ended up, 3 spots ahead, as they are behind where they could have ended up at 3. And the difference between 6 and 9 and the difference between 3 and 6, both of those are significant. So yeah, you're going to have a top 6 pick here. You're going to pick what, 4 spots higher than you have in my lifetime, in many Pacer fans' lifetimes. That's extremely exciting. You're going to have the first pick of the second round as well. You're going to have plenty of potential to move. Let me just say this. I hope that next year we are talking about a Pacers pick that is later than 6. And that would be because they probably hit on 6 and or other players continue to develop and you start to, you know, move forward and start to build off of this year's draft. I was just thinking about this though, and I don't necessarily mean this to end the podcast on a negative note, but like if there's a franchise, if there is, you know, from a Pacers sports and entertainment perspective, that deserves some good luck. And I don't know exactly how this comes. I was just doing the math, and I believe the Pacers and the Fever have now been in the draft lottery, 18, 19, 20, 21, 5 times for the Fever lately here, and now 2 times for the Pacers. And in those 7 instances, 0 times did the franchise move up. That's absurd. And so I don't know if you're a karma person, which I don't even know if I'm a karma person, or, you know, the universe aligns itself and equals itself out. Like, the Pacers are due for some good luck. They maybe didn't jump up in the draft lottery. But from a Pacers and a Fever perspective, you know, I guess as I'll kind of close here, I guess that's why maybe I wasn't quite as disappointed as maybe the average Pacers fan was. Look, everybody wanted to be in the top four, but trust me, I have unfortunately had to witness this go way worse than the opportunity of picking number six. And the Pacers are going to get the opportunity. I'll close with saying this is something I'm extremely confident in. The Pacers are going to have the opportunity, be it at six or be it with any potential movement they might look at. They're going to have the opportunity to draft a franchise or acquire a franchise-altering type of player to put with a young core that you hope is already on that path. That's exciting. And I'm excited to, you know, kind of experience the next 3 to 4 weeks of all of this with a heightened spotlight that the Pacers haven't had in quite some time.
Pat, I enjoyed this podcast. Let's do it again in, let's say, June. We'll take another couple of weeks off and then maybe have a couple of more regular shows leading up to the draft. Sound good?
Sounds good to me, yes. And for those here listening along, a quick note that I want to make before we wrap up here. The Indiana Fever season, it's underway. That those 2, 4, 6, and 10 picks are now playing. In fact, the Fever also got a player at 20 that was expected to go in the first round. So you can make a case you got close to 5 first rounders that are on the Indiana Fever. They've been a fun team to watch. They've been competitive, really competitive in 5 of their 6 games. They're already showing a ton of improvement. And I think that rebuilding process is underway on a great start with Lynn Dunn. We've got a really exciting, if you're listening to this before Sunday, May 22nd, we've got a really exciting game coming up at the Fieldhouse, where they will honor the 10-year anniversary of that championship team. So come out, watch some of the top young players on the women's side. Come out to Gainbridge Fieldhouse, get to watch basketball over the summer. Come out and honor that 10-year anniversary team. Feverbasketball.com is where you can purchase those tickets. And the season's just underway. We're just 6 games into a 36-game season, so plenty of other opportunities if you can't make that one. And as JJ alluded to, we will have hopefully at least 1 or 2 maybe even 3 podcasts between now and the draft as, we're ready for what is a very key, a very vital next 3 to 4 weeks for the Pacers franchise. For JJ, I'm Pat. We will talk to you soon on the Sideline Guys, powered by Gainbridge.